724-283-2525. It's Butler County's only live call-in talk show. It's your turn. Weekdays from 12:30 to 2 on 680 AM WISR and worldwide on the internet at WISR680.com. It's your turn. 724-283-2525. And now, it's your turn with Dave Malarkey.
Good afternoon once again, everyone. Welcome. Nice to have you with us on the Thursday edition of It's Your Turn. I almost said Friday. What, is this wishful thinking, or what am I doing here? Do I want it to be the weekend already? I don't know. Thursday, November 2nd. Well, it's a new month. Maybe that's why I'm a little bit confused here. I was going around tearing pages off calendars today here at the radio station. Nobody did it yesterday, including me. The month of November is here. Open talk as we begin the program today. We have some interesting things to talk about a little bit later on the program. First of all, our final guest today, Gary Schneider, is going to stop in and chat with us for a little bit about the dangers of carbon monoxide. I understand that this is Carbon Monoxide Awareness Month, the month of November, and I'm guessing that that's because this is the month where we really start to use furnaces, right? Right? Although, I don't know, mine's been on a couple of times already, more than that, over the last week or so in October. Carbon monoxide awareness, the dangers of carbon monoxide, it's deadly, folks. And the problem is you can't smell it. No smell to it at all. So we'll talk about that and also getting your home ready to heat it as economically as you can during the coming winter. Not necessarily a pleasant subject to bring up, but you know it's on the way. So Gary Schneider will be here from Schneider's 1 Hour Heating and Air Conditioning in Butler. Our first guest, and it'll be a little bit later on the program today because we're starting out with open talk. Our first guest will be Jonathan Balcom. And the subject is most interesting. It has to do with animals. And those of you who are pet owners will be especially interested, I think. Do animals have feelings? Well, I think most pet owners would say, yes, that's the case. Do they have more than that? Do they have emotions? Communication skills? How smart are animals? Do animals have a sense of morality? A sense of ethics? These are fascinating questions. And Jonathan Balcom addresses them. The inner lives of animals. Now, this is not, you know, just a very happy pet owner. Although I wouldn't doubt that Jonathan has pets. I don't know for sure. He is a research scientist studying the lives of animals scientifically. So I think what he has to say is pretty important. And we'll talk to him later on the program today. Jonathan Balcom. The inner lives of animals. And he raises some questions about our moral treatment of animals as well. So that's coming up a little bit later on the program, around 1 o'clock or so. Open talk to begin with, though. Phone number is 283-2525. 283-2525. Open talk on the It's Your Turn program today. What a wonderful gesture that we found out yesterday that VA Butler Healthcare is going to do. They're going to be officially naming the Community Living Center on the VA campus along Newcastle Road in honor of and in memory of the late Sergeant Joseph George Cusick, a Vietnam veteran from the Bruin area. He was in the Special Forces in Vietnam, airborne. Tough guys. And he gave his life in Vietnam. And he was awarded posthumously the Silver Star. That is not a medal that's handed out just here and there. That is a real honor. And they're going to have a big ceremony on November the 13th. That's a Monday, right? Yeah, because November 11th is Veterans Day, and it's a Saturday this year. So there's going to be a ceremony on November 11th, a tribute to Sergeant Cusick, and there'll be remarks from VA officials, including VA Butler Director David Cord, and also a keynote address by Congressman Mike Kelly, who will be attending as well. So, nice gesture. Well earned, for sure. So we'll have two of the facilities here in Butler, the Veterans Administration facilities, named in honor of local folks. You know, we have now the A.B. Abraham Community Health Center, the new facility out on Duffy Road, and now the Community Living Center named, or will be named, in honor of Sergeant Cusick. Nice bit of news that came yesterday. We can use good news every once in a while, can't we? Yeah, you better believe it. Open Talk, 283-2525 is the number. 283-2525 is the number. I was looking at new movies that are coming out. You know, we're entering that season. I don't know about you folks, but a lot of the movies that are made these days, you know, quite frankly, you couldn't pay me to go see them. I'm just not a fan of all the action movies. I know they're very popular. I know they're big. They have whole series of films with Wonder Woman and Iron Man and all these guys. It's not my cup of tea. I know they're well made. I know they're very popular. But a lot of times the really good adult movies come out around the holidays because the movie makers aren't stupid. They know that a lot of people have a little spare time over the holidays, and they save some of their best films. Opening this weekend is LBJ, the story of the late Lyndon Johnson, Lyndon Baines Johnson, President Johnson. And I just saw a trailer for it on TV a couple of days ago. I hadn't seen one earlier. It opens today across the country. Who plays LBJ? Woody Harrelson. Yes. Yes, our producer, Pat Parker's on the other side of the glass. His eyebrows went up, too. That was my first thought when I heard that Woody Harrelson was going to play LBJ. But I'll tell you what, I only saw a trailer. But it looks pretty good. I mean, he's not a dead ringer for LBJ. But the makeup people and so on and so forth, the people that, you know, fix actors' hair, and he's got a pair of LBJ glasses, and it looks pretty good. And this is apparently quite an in-depth story. Covers Lyndon Johnson from his young days in West Texas on into Washington, where he was member of Congress, and then a senator, and then vice president, and then, of course, with the assassination of John Kennedy, suddenly president of the United States at a pretty bad time. We were in the throes of Vietnam, and we were in the throes of the civil rights movement, and, of course, the country was in mourning with the shocking assassination of JFK. So whether you liked Lyndon Baines Johnson or not, I was not a particularly big fan. It was a tough time to take over as president. Tough time. And if you're talking about civil rights, he was the guy that really got it going and pushed it through back in the mid-1960s. I think I'm going to see that movie. I'll put a check mark beside that one. Okay, let's go to the telephones. It's Open Talk here on the program today. 283-2525, Open Talk. Hi, caller. This is Dave. Go right ahead. It's your turn.
Hi there. How are you today?
I'm just fine. How are you doing?
I'm doing okay. Waiting for the rain to go away.
Won't be long. It's supposed to be ending at least for today, very soon, although the next several days we're going to see showers here and there. But it's going to warm up, you know? You've heard that, right?
Yes. Yeah. I got a lot of leaves to rake up, and they're just too wet to rake up. So
yeah, I know you can't rake them when they're soaking wet.
Oh, have you already did the replay on Mayor Donaldson's interview with you.
I didn't replay it. It's already been played, yes. It was on Monday of this week.
Oh, I missed it. Then it won't be on anymore?
No. We aired all of the interviews the first 3 days of this week.
Oh, I'm sorry I missed them then. All right. That's all I called for. Thank you, and you have a good day.
Sure. You too. 283-2525 is our number. 283-2525. We've had some comments, some positive feedback on the interviews that we did. They weren't extensive. We decided we would do 15-minute interviews with all of the candidates running for either mayor of the city of Butler or city council. I figured that would give candidates enough time to state their priorities and give you a little bit of information about themselves. And I thought they went pretty well. Yeah. But they wrapped up yesterday. Started on Monday. We had two on Monday. What we have? We had Tom Donaldson and Kathy Klein on Monday. On Tuesday, we talked to Jamie Lee Gearing, James Kempel. Don't think of who else we had on Tuesday. I don't have the schedule in front of me now. Yesterday, Ben Smith and Kenneth Bonus. On Tuesday, we talked with Jeff Smith, candidate for council. So we've covered the bases. And we didn't want to wait till right up to Election Day. We thought beginning of this week was a good time to do that. And I'm sorry that you missed it. 283-2525 is our number, 283-2525. I have had a difficult time trying to do research on the Ground Observation Corps only because I've been extremely busy the last couple of days taking care of a bunch of stuff. I'm really getting caught up. Did you ever, in your work, whether it's work outside the home or work inside the home, you just get behind and, it's very frustrating sometimes. So I have been catching up and doing a pretty good job, I must say, kind of patting myself on the back about that. But I have not been able to do additional research on the Ground Observer Corps. We've had several calls on that. In fact, I had some information from one of the listeners who brought it into me. It's a fascinating subject for me, and I promise I'm not going to let it go. I just haven't been able to get to it yet. Simple as that. 283-2525, our number. Back to the people we go. Hi there. This is Dave Malarkey. Go right ahead. It's your turn.
Hello. I just wonder if any thought has ever been given to broadcasting the symphony programs. Or is it even feasible?
Well, it could be done, but to the best of my knowledge, it never has been. It would be a somewhat difficult task, but it certainly could be done. But I'm not sure that the symphony, would want to do that.
Well, I suppose it might cut down their audience a little bit.
I would imagine it would. Yes.
Would appreciate it. I, for one. Anyway, it was just a thought. Thank you for answering.
Have you ever gone to one of the Butler Symphony concerts?
Yes, I've gone to quite a few, but it's hard for me to get around at this point in my life.
I can understand that. I can.
It would be nice to be able to hear it live.
I can understand that.
Anyway, just a thought.
Sure.
Thank you.
Thanks. 283-2525 is the number. To the best of my knowledge, that's never been done. No, never been done. And to give it the proper sound, you'd need many, many microphones. I don't know if you've ever seen any of the symphony concerts that are telecast on PBS, Channel 13. They do a marvelous job. And I'm not particularly well-versed in classical music. I like it. And I do watch those concerts every once in a while. But you need a lot of people to make it sound good. You could put one microphone out there, but it wouldn't do them justice. 283-2525 is the number. It's open talk today. 283-2525. Let's get back to the people here. Don't want to keep anybody waiting. Hi there, caller. This is Dave. Go right ahead. It's your turn.
Good afternoon, Dave. How are you?
Just fine. Nice to talk to you today.
Thank you. I'm just calling to ask, I haven't had a chance to hear, I've been pretty busy. Is there any place around Butler that's taking leftover trick-or-treat candy for the soldiers?
I haven't heard that this year. No, no.
Yeah.
The only thing I heard was in the Mars School District, I think they were taking excess for the rest of this week, actually, through tomorrow. And they were going to give that to, it was one of the area food banks. I think it was the Lighthouse Foundation. I'm not sure. But I haven't heard anything about sending it to the troops. Now, that was done in the past by, I think there were some dentists locally, weren't there? That didn't
yes,
they, didn't they collect and
so.
Send it to the troops overseas? But I haven't heard of that program being operational this year. So it may be, but I haven't heard about it.
Yeah, neither have I.
Did you have a lot of leftover candy?
Well, yes, we didn't get very many trick-or-treaters this year.
That's why I was asking, because I've heard that from several people here at the radio station, that they were kind of disappointed that at the turnout, and they had over-purchased, quite frankly. they had oodles of it left over.
Yeah.
I don't know whether that was widespread or... just in some places. It was a cold night on Halloween. It was cold and windy and rainy, so maybe a lot of parents just didn't bring their little kids out. And that's who it's for, really, right? It's not for big kids, it's for little kids.
Right. Well, I live in the Highfield area at like a lower end, and people were telling me, the trick-or-treaters that came, that the main drag of Highfield was just polluted with kids. People were just bringing their little kids by car, and they'd just run house to house.
Yeah, so that can be a problem sometimes.
They go a lot there, but not they didn't come out this far.
Well, maybe somebody knows about that collection program. We'll invite them to call, and if you can keep listening for a little while, we'll pass that on to you.
Okay, thank you. Yes, I'd like to hear something.
Okay.
Thank you.
Sure, good to talk to you. Bye-bye. 283-2525. Anybody hear about that program this year? Not going on anywhere? I've not heard. Let's go to this line next. Hi, caller. This is Dave. Go right ahead. It's your turn.
Hey, Dave. It's Jack. How are you today?
Good, Jack. How are you?
I'm good, thanks. I just happened to get in the car to go to lunch, and I heard this lady talking. One of the school teachers is getting ready to make a big mailing. She does it every year. Last year, they sent 160 or 180 packages to some of the APOs overseas.
Yeah.
And I know they include, lots of different things like powdered drink mixes and energy bars and baby wipes and that type of thing in there for the packages. But I would imagine that she'd be happy to get some candy.
Do you know what school district it is?
I think she's at Center Township. I have her phone number and name at my office, which I'll be back in an hour or so.
Boy, if you wouldn't mind calling that into our front desk, and then we would have it here in case anybody called.
But I think you'd have an enjoyable conversation with her, too. She'd be a good guest for you.
Yeah.
She does this every year. Her husband was deployed several times in Afghanistan, and she started sending him packages, and now that he's back stateside, she has now continued to do it. They get one of the big trucks from down at the 9/11 air wing to come up to the school, and they load the truck up and bring it to the post office. I don't have my notes in front of me, so I think she's going to do the mailing on the 21st.
Well, that should give me enough time.
She's talking like 250 packages.
Wow. Hey, I'd love to have her name and contact number, and I'll try to get in touch with her. I'd love to talk to her.
Yeah, I will. As soon as I get back to the office, I'll give you a call.
Appreciate that. Thanks very much. Call the front office, because I've got guests by that time.
I understand.
Okay.
All right.
Thanks a lot.
Talk to you later.
Yeah,
yep.
Thanks, Jack. Thanks. 283-2525. Love to talk to that. I've not heard of that. Have you? How about that? That would be an elementary teacher at Center Township, right? The Butler District. Wonderful gesture. Well, that's a That's a lot of packages to send, huh? Over 200 packages. Well, we will do our best to get, even if it's a short interview. Obviously, if she's a teacher, she's, you know, going to be in the classroom during the hours that we're on. So we'll try to get at least a few minutes with her. I'd love to. 283-2525 is our number. It's open talk here on the It's Your Turn program today. 283-2525. We were talking yesterday about the tragedy of still another terror attack in New York City. Guy rents a truck and, goodness sakes, drives onto a bicycle way in New York City right along the Hudson River and starts blowing down the bikeway 20 blocks, I guess. Running over bicyclists, 8 dead, many others injured. He finally hit a school bus, jumped out, was running around with a couple of guns, which the last report I heard, they turned out to be, one was a pellet gun and one was a paintball gun. Police don't know that. He was shot in the abdomen by a police officer. Thank goodness that officer was there. And apparently he's going to survive. They took him to court in a wheelchair for his hearing yesterday, his arraignment hearing. So even though he's in pretty bad shape, apparently not life-threatening. I don't know how it's possible to stop these so-called lone wolf terrorist attacks. I don't know whether it's possible. You can't stop somebody from renting a truck. Although, from the early reports that I've heard, and it's still early, he apparently scribbled something on the rental agreement where he rented the truck from a lumber yard. Something that I would think would cause suspicion among most people. But I mean, how do you stop it? How do you stop the guy who took a whole arsenal of assault-type weapons up to the 32nd floor of the Mandalay Hotel in Las Vegas and started firing on a concert crowd down below? Killed 58 people. Wounded 500 or 600 more. Think about that carnage. One guy. He was American, by the way. He was not Muslim. Can you stop that? I don't know. Now, if it's a plot, you know, if you have a cell of terrorists, similar to what we had in Boston when the Boston Marathon bombings, or some of the European terrorist attacks in Paris, in Belgium, in London, most of them have been cells, terrorist cells, the exception being a couple in London where they used the same weapon, a vehicle. Got in a vehicle and started running people over. I don't know how you can stop that. I don't know. It wouldn't help to stop all immigrants coming in from predominantly Muslim countries. That certainly wouldn't have stopped the Las Vegas killer. He was homegrown. American citizen. So were many of the others, by the way. Now, a different story again with the 9/11 attacks. Crashing the airliners into the World Trade Center buildings and the Pentagon. And I'm still wondering if we'll ever get the final analysis on that. I'm extremely troubled by the fact that there were reports of these guys taking flying lessons in different parts of the country and being interested only in flying a plane, not particularly interested in learning how to land one. Some of these reports were passed on to higher ups in criminal investigation agencies and kind of got brushed aside. I don't know whether we'll ever get the full story on that. Hopefully we're doing better things. New York City Police, I saw their commissioner on TV yesterday. And I mean, it's almost astonishing. They have gone around more than once to hundreds of truck rental places. You know, in the wake of these terrorist attacks in Europe, where people would rent trucks and drive people over, they've gone around to hundreds of truck rental agencies with information kits. So here's what you want to be alert for. Just want to, you know, keep your eyes open. If there's anything that's suspicious, let us know. And according to the commissioner, they've done that twice, not just once. That's pretty good, at least for my way of thinking. That's pretty good precautionary work. Whether they visited this truck rental place in New Jersey or not, just across the Hudson River, I do not know. I do not know. We will continue to get more information on this. And who knows, maybe from the guy himself, if he lives, which it appears he will, and goes on trial. I don't know. But it's something that in most areas of the world we just have to live with now. And it's not just in Western democracies. Yeah, the big stories we hear are in Paris and in Belgium and in London and in Germany and in Spain and here in the United States. Canada has had a couple of incidents. But there's a lot of them even in third world countries, in African countries, in countries in the Middle East. Every week we hear of these terrorist attacks. They're all over the world. Certainly is sobering and sad, that's for sure. Well, listen, we have to take a break here because it's just about time for us to talk with our first guest today. And I think it's going to be an interesting chat. Jonathan Balcom will be talking with us. And he is an animal researcher, an animal research scientist studying the behavior of animals. And he explores a lot of questions. Do animals have feelings? Do they have emotions? Do they have even a sense of morality? He says yes. And he says there's scientific research to back it up now. A lot of pet owners probably would say, well, of course they do. I've known this for a long time. But there's now scientific research. So we're anxious to talk to him. His name is Jonathan Balcom. And after a quick break, we will be visiting with him on the It's Your Turn program. Still later on the program, the dangers of carbon monoxide, deadly carbon monoxide. Gary Schneider will be here to talk about that with us later on the program. We take a quick break, first of all, though, and then we talk with Jonathan Balcom here in just a moment or so. One of our sponsors, listeners, is Cummings Candy and Coffee Shop. Main Street downtown Butler, actually three locations now, but Main Street downtown is still their headquarters, their primary location, of course, right under the red and white awning on North Main Street. You know, they've been there for 100 years. Yeah, the family business actually goes back a little bit longer than that, back to 1905. But they've been at that Main Street location, well, for over a century. That's tradition. If you're interested in some gift ideas, especially if you need corporate orders of custom gift boxes, they have those available at Cummings for clients. You can choose from an assortment of different selections: chocolate-covered potato chips, pretzels, graham crackers, cherry cordials. You can add a half-pound bag of Butler's own proprietary blend of coffee, the Main Street Roast from Cummings. Roasted right there, by the way. If you're interested in corporate orders or information on this, call Barry Cummings. His phone number is 724-287-3287. And now, yes, three locations of Cummings, Candy and Coffee, Main Street, of course, There's also a Cummings at Butler Memorial Hospital, and the newest Cummings, Cummings West, on Route 68, Evans City Road, right on the outskirts of town. Oh, and peanut brittle is available now, too. They're open 7 days a week. Cummings, candy and coffee shops.
Looking for a way to make your company's benefit package a little more competitive? Here's one that's so easy, more than 130 local organizations and businesses have added it to their programs. Membership in Armco Credit Union. At Armco Credit Union, your employees will have access to the best loan rates and more free banking services, while direct deposit and payroll deduction options make it convenient for both of you. And best of all, it doesn't cost you a thing. Learn more at armcocu.com or by calling 284-2020. Armco Credit Union is an equal opportunity lender and is insured by NCUA.
Join the Butler County Symphony this Saturday evening as the orchestra presents a concert entitled The Great American Songbook, Butler Intermediate High School Auditorium. Program selections include music from American legendary composers like George Gershwin, Cole Porter, Henry Mancini, and many more. A pre-concert talk with musical director and conductor Matthew Kramer starts at 6:30, the concert at 7:30. Tickets available at the Symphony Office on the Diamond in downtown Butler or online at butlersymphony.org. The Great American Songbook, this Saturday night, concert time 7:30, Butler Intermediate High School Auditorium. We're very pleased to be able to talk for a few minutes here today on the It's Your Turn program with author Jonathan Balcom about his book entitled Second Nature. Jonathan, nice to meet you. It's a pleasure to have you with us for a few minutes here on the It's Your Turn program today.
Thanks for having me, Dave.
I heard about your book through your publisher, and she was telling me a little bit about it to see if I might be interested in scheduling an interview with you, and I was sharing this with you before we went on the air. She got about three sentences into the explanation of the book, and I said, I want to talk to that man. I'd love to do an interview with him about second nature. The subtitle of your book is The Inner Lives of Animals. And I suspect this is something that a lot of us, particularly pet owners, Jonathan, might have well suspected that there was more, perhaps, than met the eye, but we were looking for a little more scientific exploration of this whole phenomenon, the inner lives of animals. And that's what you have done and have attempted to recount in your book. I'm correct?
That's right. There's two parts to my book. One, the main part is a showcase of mostly recent scientific studies, as well as stories and anecdotes that show that animals do have rich inner lives, emotions, intelligence, cognition, perceptiveness, awareness, communication skills. They're pleasure seekers like we are, even virtues. So while, you know, anyone who's lived with cats or dogs probably doesn't need a lot of convincing that these animals are emotional and that they have inner lives, it does help to have some science to reflect on that. And so I do recount a number of studies that tend to get caught up and stuck in the lost, if you like, for the general public, lost in the rigorous scientific literature. So what I did was I spent a lot of time delving into some of the journals, the scholarly journals that publish this sort of stuff, and there's just a lot of really interesting things going on now that science is open to asking questions about what's going on inside an animal's mind, what's that animal feeling. And I say that because for much of the 20th century, there was a taboo against asking questions of that nature. So it's a very exciting time to be an ethologist, which is my field of study, the study of animal behavior.
A little bit about our guest, Jonathan Balcom, Ph.D. Dr. Balcom is an independent animal behavior research scientist. He is also a consultant for the Physicians Committee for Responsible Medicine. He has written a previous book entitled A Pleasurable Kingdom. He lives in the Washington, D.C. area, and his book is Second Nature, The Inner Lives of Animals. You mentioned just a moment or so ago that for a long time, centuries in fact, a lot of folks thought that humans were the only ones that really mattered. And if you would be so bold as to suggest that animals might have true feelings, people looked at you like you were out on the fringe, or maybe just totally dismissed you as you know, out in left field. But that is not the case anymore, and this is a fairly recent development. I'm correct on this, Jonathan?
Yes, I would say only in the last 30 or 40 years. There was a period in the late Victorian era where, particularly in England, scientists took an interest in the inner lives of animals, and Charles Darwin probably had a lot to do with that happening. But then science kind of went to sleep on these kinds of things for the most of the 20th century. It was around the 1970s when an American biologist named Donald Griffin wrote a book called Question of Animal Awareness, I believe was the title. It was the first of three books he wrote, ending in a book called Animal Minds. And that really got things rolling, and that coincided with the publication of a book called Animal Liberation by the philosopher Peter Singer. And that's sort of the other part of my book, is what does it all mean for our relationship to animals? So the fact that those two areas of thought really emerged around the same time has a lot to do with why you and I are talking about this today, and why my book is one of many that now discuss animal minds, animal thinking, animal emotions. There's still a few and far between, but increasingly there's more and more discussion about these phenomena.
Was it simply a case of within the past 10 or 15 years that new research was started, or has there been a new technology available that makes us able to learn more about animal feelings?
Sure. It's a combination of a new way of looking at and studying animals and some of the new technology that allows us to study them. I think another important figure here is Jane Goodall, who is now world famous for her long-term studies of chimpanzees. Mm-hmm. When she started studying them in 1960, she broke another taboo in science, which was actually naming animals. Until then, your subjects were just numbers, and they were supposed to be only numbers, and she took a lot of flack from other primatologists when she came and presented and talking about Flo and David Greybeard and these other individuals, and that was part of the power of that. It presented these animals as individuals, and heaven forbid that they're not individuals. Of course they're individuals. They're individuals with personalities. As I like to say, they don't merely have a biology, they have a biography. So that definitely was another turning point in the study of animals and the recognition that they are individuals with lives and lives that are worth living. In terms of technology, we now have, you know, we have micro cameras that we can actually affix to a bird's wing, and so we can actually observe what they're doing in their private lives, and they're tiny little devices that the birds barely even notice, and they won't even try and preen them off. So the technology has definitely helped to get inside the animals' inner lives and understand them better.
You will learn many things by reading Jonathan Balcom's book, Second Nature. You had mentioned Jane Goodall and her work with chimpanzees. One thing you will read about, the listeners, in this book is that chimpanzees can not only defeat humans in short-term memory games, they can actually trounce humans, beat them to a pulp in short-term memory games. I didn't know that, Jonathan.
Yes, it's work that's been done with a colony of captive chimps in Japan, and it's remarkable. One can go on YouTube and just key in short-term memory in chimps. That probably would work. And you can see video footage of a young chimpanzee, just one of many, who's sitting in front of a computer monitor, and the numbers 1 to 9 flash on the screen. They're scattered about the screen in random order, and then they're quickly replaced. After a second, even half a second or less, they're replaced by white squares. And the chimp just casually points to each square in the sequence from the 1 to 9 that those numbers appeared. And a human is lucky to get to 3 or 4. We just simply don't have this visual acuity that a chimp has. They have this amazing skill. In fact, Ben Pridmore, who's the memory champion of Britain, he can memorize a shuffled deck of cards in about 30 seconds. He went up against Ayumu, who was one of the particularly adept chimps at this skill, and he did about his third as well. So it's a really cool revelation to people like me who think animals deserve so much more respect, because it's an example of an animal exceeding a human in a raw intelligence test. There's many other examples of cognitive feats that animals have and skills Consider that Clark's Nutcrackers can remember 33 locations of 33,000 seeds and nuts that they've buried and cached away during the warmer months, so that they can remember where to go to find most of them during the harsh winter months. Rats have metacognition. Scrub jays have episodic memory. There's all sorts of really interesting cognitive skills that animals have that I describe in my book. And the key word here, Dave, is the word sentience. And sentience is a word that, unfortunately, most people may not know yet. And I hope that word will become more common in our language, because it's a very important word. I believe sentience is the bedrock of ethics. And sentience is simply the capacity to feel things, be it pains, pleasures, emotions, these sorts of things. We know we're sentient, and part of the task of my book is to showcase the sentience of other animals. It's not at all clear that we're the most sentient. We may exceed other animals in certain skills, such as technology and the arts, but other animals may feel pain just as exquisitely as we do, and this is not a new idea. It goes back centuries, but it's something that has great import to the relationship that we have with animals.
Do animals have feelings? Are they sentient? I'm glad you used the word, because it enables me to segue quite nicely into a few words from a well-known South African novelist, J.M. Coetzee, who wrote the foreword for your book, Second Nature. And Coetzee said, and I'm just quoting a small piece here, he said, "Why should the onus fall on animals, whatever their species, to prove that they are sentient?" And he goes on to say that you answer the question by showing in your book that animals think and feel, they are sentient, and that they even show morality. Really?
Yeah, this is a new frontier in the study of animal behavior, the notion that they are virtuous, that they have a sense of fairness. Certainly virtuous behavior is widespread in nature. Particularly social living requires animals to get along. We know that from our own experiences. And it pays us to be nice to others, because other people remember the favor and they're more inclined to return the favor. That's how we sustain friendships and such. And other animals have the similar sorts of pressures and expectations in their societies. So restraint is widespread. Spontaneous helping, midwifery, wet nursing, nannying, babysitting, all of these phenomena occur fairly widely in nature. And some recent studies show fairness awareness. Scientists use the jargon term inequity aversion, but really it's just a form of fairness awareness. So if one is standing in front of two capuchin monkeys and feeding them with sliced cucumber, they happily accept them. They like cucumbers, but the minute you switch to the preferred grapes with one of the monkeys, the other one, on receiving a cucumber, will hand it back or toss it aside and hold the hand out expecting to get a grape, because he or she recognizes the imbalance, the inequity. Recent studies of dogs show a similar phenomenon. Dogs who have learned the simple task of shaking a paw, offering a paw when a hand is offered to shake, they will happily offer their paw up to 30 times or so if both dogs sitting next to each other are not getting the treat. But when one of them is being given a treat each time he or she offers the paw and the other one isn't, well, the one who isn't getting the treat will stop offering the paw after about a dozen times, showing that they are aware of an inequity here and an unfairness. So it's an intriguing area of research. And these are what's one of the things that's exciting about these sorts of studies is it shows we can actually probe into the inner lives of animals without harming them and in creative ways. Scientists have great ingenuity in coming up with ways of addressing these things. And one other thing I just want to mention in terms of virtue, this is a sort of more of an anecdote, but it's from the well-known primatologist Franz de Waal. He describes in one of his books one of many examples, and this is a monkey named Mozu who was born with a terrible physical disability. That is, she had no hands or feet, and she was a macaque monkey. And you would expect an animal with that kind of disability to die young and not survive. Not only did Mozu survive, but she lived a lengthy, productive life. She successfully reared five young. There's no way she could have done that by herself. She did that on the strength of the help and the assistance and the understanding and the integrity that the other monkeys in her group showed her.
Isn't this fascinating, listeners? It really is. Our guest, and we'll continue our conversation with him in just a moment, a quick break. Our guest is Jonathan Balcom. He's the author of a book entitled Second Nature, The Inner Lives of Animals. You're listening to It's Your Turn here on WISR. My name is Dave Malarkey, and we'll be back with more with our guest in just a moment. If you have noticed that you've started to have a little trouble hearing all the time, or maybe someone in your household is having a little trouble hearing, why not suggest Hearing Aid Service by Kelly? A complimentary consultation starts things off, and you'll be pleasantly surprised by the personalized one-on-one care that you get from Kelly. Your hearing aid will actually be measured to fit your ear. It's not one size fits all. And Kelly will take the time to make sure everything is the way you want it. Your hearing will be better. It'll be comfortable, too. Folks, Kelly is interested in helping you. She is not interested in selling you the highest price hearing aid. In fact, you'll save thousands because there's no overhead. People who have made the change or consulted with Kelly are so happy that they did. Why not call the hearing aid lady? Simple as that. Hearing Aid Service by Kelly. Here's the number, 724-756-4327. 724-756-4327.
Hi, this is Howie Pinckney with Pinckney Capital Management in Portersville. Today, many people need help managing their investments. The investment options available today can be confusing. If you would like to talk to someone for help, why not call me for an appointment? Howie Pinckney at Pinckney Capital Management, 1284 Perry Highway, Portersville, Pennsylvania. My telephone number is 724-368-4224. Securities and advisory services offered through Commonwealth Financial Network. Member FINRA, SIPC, a registered investment advisor.
We continue with the It's Your Turn today, talking with our guest, Jonathan Balcom, the author of a book on the inner lives of animals. The book is entitled Second Nature. Jonathan Balcom is an independent animal behavior research scientist, and he has also authored a previous book entitled Pleasurable Kingdom. What you were discussing before the break, Jonathan, some pretty remarkable stuff about animals having morality, being able to make value judgments, recognizing what's fair and unfair. This is quite a divergent view from what we often see portrayed in the popular media, which not always, but so many times, seems to be a sort of struggle or perish type of mentality among animals. Survival of the fittest, kill or be killed. You know what I'm talking about here?
I certainly do, Dave, and I do take issue with that view. I spent quite a few pages discussing that and trying to present a more salutary way of looking at nature, because as I argued in my earlier book, as you mentioned, Pleasurable Kingdom, Animals in the Nature of Feeling Good, it's an example of how we tend to look at things through a glass, with a glass half empty kind of attitude in wild nature rather than a glass half full. Until I wrote that book, the subject of pleasure in animals had been widely neglected. You will not find the word pleasure in hardly any biology textbook. So that's an example of how we've tend to look at nature as a harsh, cruel, earnest, constant struggle, nature red in tooth and claw type world, as you just described it. So, and that gets back to what we were talking about, virtue, but also cooperation. Nature is so often presented as a competitive place, as a predatory place. Predators are relatively rare in nature for the simple reason that energy is lost as you go up the food chain. That's why there are far fewer hawks than there are snakes, than there are frogs, than there are grasshoppers, than there are grass, just to take a simple food chain. I don't mean just in terms of numbers of individuals, but I mean biomass. The total weight of each of those levels goes up hugely as you go further down the food chain. So nature can sustain many more herbivores than carnivores, which means that being killed is a relatively rare event, at least being preyed upon by a predator. So, and also, even an animal who dies young, and this is controversial, and I've yet to have anyone really address this to me who I'm making this argument. Even an animal who dies young has a life, has had an opportunity to live, and I think that has to be factored into the equation. We just assume that an animal who's preyed upon is a failure or it's a terrible thing. Take a gazelle who's 2 years old and perhaps barely at reproductive age who falls prey to a cheetah, say. Well, it's sad, but that gazelle lived 700 days of life, of 700 sunrises, 700 days of foraging and running and learning to play, all those sorts of things, and then the tragic end. Well, we're all going to die someday anyway. So I just throw that out as an example of an illustration of why I think we need a more nuanced view of nature, and we need to be not making this assumption that it's not worth living for them. And frankly, I think there's a subtle psychological reason why we may like to think that, because it helps justify our own treatment of animals. And that's the paradox today, in my view, is that while our knowledge of animals and their sentience and their capacities is higher than ever before, unfortunately, our treatment lags further behind. Humankind kills more animals each year than at any other point in history by simple dint of the fact that there are more of us, and meat consumption is on the rise, in Asia at least.
I must speak of the photograph that graces the cover of your book, Jonathan, Second Nature. I'm not sure whether it's a chimp, it's a primate.
It's a monkey, a macaque monkey.
Okay, I'm not able to identify that at a drop of a hat because I have no expertise, but it is a, I don't know how else to describe it other than to say it is a loving portrait of a mother and child embracing, and there they are half submerged in a pond or a river, but the facial expressions of the two as they embrace each other. I mean, if there was ever a picture worth 1,000 words, this picture is worth 10,000 words, Jonathan.
Yes, I was just going to say the same thing. Actually, it's an opportunity to plug my next book, which is because this photo was to appear in a pictorial book focused on animal pleasure, which is titled Exalted Ark. But I so loved that photo, I thought it was so appropriate for the cover of this book that I asked the photographer if he wouldn't mind if we would use it instead for the cover. And, of course, he was delighted. His name's Steve Mandel, a super guy, great photographer. And, yes, I mean, looking at that photo, as you say, sometimes a picture says 1,000 words. Just to look at that moment, to the intimacy, the connection between those two animals. And incidentally, it's the same species or a very close relative of the monkeys of which Mozu was a member that I described a little earlier.
Oh, yes. We're talking with Jonathan Balcom, the author of a book on the inner lives of animals called Second Nature. A little bit about the structure of your book, Jonathan. It's actually divided into three separate parts. Could you talk a little bit about that methodology for us?
Sure. The opening chapter is really rather autobiographical. It talks about my becoming a biologist. But the first part of the book is called Experience, and that's sort of a showcase of animal sensitivity, intelligence, emotions, and awareness. And then part two is Coexistence, which is more into the realms of how animals get along. This is the cooperation and the social living that we touched on earlier. So I have chapters on communication, on sociability, and on virtue. And then part three, is emergence, which is when I get into the relationship between our species, our animal species. We are, of course, biologically animals, and all the other animal species out there. So I address this notion that we tend to have a cruel, negative view of nature, of wild nature. And then I take a few pot shots at our own species. We're not so great as we often make ourselves out to be, and certainly when it comes to our treatment of animals, there's a lot that needs fixing. And then finally, I finish on a more positive note on the signs of change that are beginning to take place in terms of our awareness, how that's reflected through acts of legislation and the recent history. If you look at our history, cultural change happens a lot faster than evolutionary change, and that's encouraging because in the last few centuries, we've done away with slavery, we've ended the subjugation of women's rights, the denial of civil rights, and colonialism has pretty much come to an end as well. So those are some pretty heavy examples of cultural and social and moral progress that humankind has had. I'm hopeful, and I won't live to see it, but I'm hopeful that humankind will look back on the 21st century, the century that we have recently entered, as the century of the animals.
You had mentioned a few moments ago about the concepts of animals having pleasure. I think we talked about it in connection with the photograph on the cover of your book, Second Nature. Is it your contention then that animals do experience pleasure in some cases in just the ordinary ordinary life of touching, of eating, of sex? Do animals experience pleasure here, or is this simply a biological impulse?
Can anyone really doubt it? And you mentioned just some of the realms: touch, food, sex, play, even aesthetics. These are subjects that I devote quite a bit of time to in my earlier book, Pleasurable Kingdom. And as I said earlier, there's been very little scientific attention given to this, but there is some, and there's more and more, again, as scientists take interest in animals' inner lives. I'll just give you a couple of examples. Rats, for instance, show a mirthful response to being tickled. In fact, one study that was done had rats in two groups. These were young rats. They spend a lot of time playing. And rats in group A would be petted on the neck once a day for 5 minutes, and then rats in group B would be flipped over on their back and tickled in the belly. And this mimics what rats do to each other when they're playing. And then when they tested them in arena one at a time, a rat who was expecting to be petted would come to the hand, but rats expecting to be flipped over and tickled, based on past experience, would run to the hand on average 4 times as quickly. You know how scientists are measuring things. And also they would utter 7 times as many what are called ultrasonic chirps, at least that's what I call them. These are 50 kilohertz calls, well above our level of hearing, but we can tune into them with bat detectors. And they make 7 times as many of those sounds, which are associated with pleasurable experiences, than do rats who are merely getting a stroke on the neck. There's things like hippopotamuses who come into these freshwater springs in Africa, and fishes come, and the hippos spread their toes and spread their legs apart and open their mouths, and the fish pluck around on them, and the hippos show every sign of really enjoying that. There are many examples of animal sex that is not just a perfunctory reproductive type behavior that we so often assume wild animals engage in. Animals are highly motivated to engage in sexual behavior that is clearly and manifestly not going to result in any offspring. So those are just a couple of brief examples. There's a whole book full of them, as I say in my earlier book, of animals feeling pleasure. And I just one more point I want to make with that, Dave, and I think it's very significant, and that is that if an animal can feel pleasure, then the animal's not just a pain avoider. The animal's a pleasure seeker, and we ought to be able to relate to that because pleasure informs so much of our own lives. And what that means is, in philosophical parlance, is that animal has intrinsic value. That life has intrinsic value. That's a value beyond any utilitarian, any use-type value that we may have for that animal. And so that has very, to me, very significant moral implications. It means that life's worth living, and it means that death is harmful.
Our guest is Jonathan Balcom. He is the author of a book entitled Second Nature, The Inner Lives of Animals. Jonathan, if animals can experience pleasure in such simple life experiences as touching, eating, sex, can they experience the flip side? Can animals be depressed?
They certainly can. One powerful example is from baboons. When a woman loses her infant in our society, she obviously grieves. Both parents will experience grief for a lengthy time, and that's reflected in increased hormones in their bloodstream called glucocorticoids. Well, a long-term study of baboons shows that mother baboons who lose an infant show the exact same pattern. Their glucocorticoid hormones go up for a month or more. This is studies in the wild. And the scientists studying these animals interpret it as a form of bereavement. It's a manifestation of the grief, the bereavement of the loss. And again, in parallel, in human society, we rally around, we send flowers, we bring soup over, we send cards, we show moral support. I don't think baboons send flowers to each other, but they do show moral support by increasing their grooming networks. They expand their social support system. And this is thought to be a form of therapy for them, just as it would be for us.
are there, we had mentioned earlier as we come close to the end of our time together here, we had mentioned earlier that much of what you have discovered and you write about in your book, Second Nature, diverges from the common image that we see presented about animals, particularly in the wild, in the popular media. Have you come across any examples in the media where you think they're getting it pretty close to correctly? I mean, we have a lot of there's even a whole channel now available, I think, in most of the United States called Animal Planet. We've had National Geographic specials on PBS. Are there any programs or filmmakers who, in your estimation, are getting it right or getting it better?
So I'm sure there are some photographers and filmmakers out there who are beginning to move in that direction, and I think the literature is going to help push it that way. And I'll add that I was actually interviewed on camera recently for a TV series that could happen, so it's possible. If I was hosting a TV series, I would certainly do my best to steer it more in that direction. So I think looking ahead, that change is going to continue to accelerate. But right now I feel like there's a lot more that needs to be done before TV documentaries and showcases of animals are really showing them to be the rich inner lives that they have.
A lot of questions, listeners. Do baboons have a keen sense of right or wrong? Do dogs and cats get their feelings hurt? Our author thinks so. The book is Second Nature, The Inner Lives of Animals by Jonathan Balcom. Jonathan, thank you so much for being so generous with your time. Your subject is just incredibly fascinating, and your book is terrific. Nice to meet you, sir. Nice to have you with us today.
It's a pleasure, Dave. Thank you.
Hop the bus. Leave the driving up to us.
The bus.
We're going your way. Getting there starts here. Just hop the bus. Easy and economical. Just hop the bus. No car, no problem. The bus will get you there. 'Cause that's what we do. Hop the bus. Leave the driving up to us.
The bus.
We're going your way.
The Butler County Republican Party stands united in our support of our candidate, Ben Smith, for mayor of Butler, who won the vote of our citizens in the primary election. I'm Larry Thompson, and I share our party's enthusiasm for Ben Smith, who will bring a strong financial management background, strategic planning, and a focused commitment to the resurgence of our city's vitality and prosperity to the mayor's office. He will work diligently in cooperation with council and all community members to effectively position Butler as a county seat to be a business hub for Butler County. Please vote for Ben Smith for mayor on Election Day.
Paid for by the Republican Committee.
That frightening sound is one we hear quite often throughout the day. Our heart quickens and immediately we wonder what happened. A medical emergency can be frightening, every tick of the clock crucial. And that's why Butler Ambulance Service is dedicated to be there with every ounce of care possible. Butler Ambulance Service is within minutes of providing you or a loved one with treatment and transportation. Call 282-9595 to find out more. Butler Ambulance Service is a phone call away from serving you.
Welcome back, good friends. I want to tell you, that's one of the more fascinating conversations we've ever had about the inner life of animals. With Jonathan Balcom. Hey, good final segment coming up on the program today. We welcome an acquaintance of long standing, Gary Schneider, is the owner of Schneider's 1 Hour Heating and Air Conditioning here in Butler. And we want to talk about a very, very important safety concern, especially as we enter the heating season here in November. Gary Schneider, good to see you. Nice to have you here again.
Good to see you too, Dave.
Yeah. This is, November is Carbon Monoxide Awareness Month.
Yeah, carbon monoxide is something that, you know, as we close in our homes for winter, windows aren't open as much.
Mm-hmm.
You need to start being more concerned with what is in your home and, you know, make sure that you're prepared and have the right detectors in there in case, you know, you need to know that there's something bad in there.
A lot of people don't realize how deadly carbon monoxide is. I mean, it can kill you in fairly short order. And as I understand it, the problem is you can't smell it, you can't see it. You don't know it's there unless you have a detector.
That's right. Carbon monoxide is odorless. It's colorless, so you can't really see it in the air. Mm-hmm. And the more concentration that you get in the house, the quicker that it's going to affect you. So I looked it up on the internet the other day. They say 20,000 people in the U.S. Go to the hospital a year because of carbon monoxide poisoning, and an average of 400 actually die because they become overcome with it.
Folks, does that number astonish you? It should. 20,000 people in the United States every year go to the hospital with carbon monoxide poisoning. 400 die. So fortunately, not everybody does, but the symptoms that you're slowly succumbing to carbon monoxide poisoning, I've never seen anybody. I've read about it. I guess you get very sleepy, very tired, and the next thing you know, you kind of pass out. We have very sad stories of couples, husbands and wives, who have both died because they both just slowly went to sleep. That was the end.
Yeah, and actually, locally here, I know that through the paper and watching or hearing on the radio that we've had a few in our Butler area that's actually happened to also. So,
yes, we have.
You know, they measure that in your home by, they call it parts per million. So if you had a million particles of air in your home, and they start with 35. So if you had 35 parts per million of carbon monoxide in the air, they're saying that you would end up with headaches, you'd be dizzy after 6 to 8 hours. So that's a real low dose of carbon monoxide.
Mm-hmm.
Young children and the elderly are the most at risk because a lot of them are in the house 24 hours a day. They don't go out. You and I, we get up in the morning, we go to work. When we get out of the house, we get to breathe some fresh air. When we come back in, if there's carbon monoxide in there, it starts to invade our body. But in the morning, we go back to work.
Mm-hmm.
The young and the elderly, they may be in the house for a week at a time and never get out. So that's where you have to be most cautious. So
I don't know when they perfected carbon monoxide detectors. I know. The first thing that I had when I started living on my own was a smoke detector, and they weren't exactly pricey, but it was an expense. They very quickly came down in price to a smoke detector for less than $5. The first time I bought a carbon monoxide detector, it was pretty expensive.
Yeah,
but they've come down a lot now too.
Absolutely, yeah. Carbon monoxide detectors have come down a lot, and even smoke detectors. You can buy a detector today that does smoke, fire, carbon monoxide. Mm-hmm. It'll even do natural gas leaks in your house, all combined in one. So the other thing about detectors is you used to always get a negative go off on that detector. So they've perfected that a little bit, and the detectors, like a carbon monoxide detector, it has to detect more than 30 parts per million for more than an hour before it'll actually go off. So when it does go off, you should heed warning and head for fresh air. Mm-hmm. You don't want to say, maybe it's just a bad reading. You want to get going on it. So
I have, in fact, I just purchased a new one. I think it was last year. Because, and I didn't know this, I found out that there's a shelf life on these things. They still look pretty on the outside, but whatever the detector mechanism is inside actually has a... So I think mine was 7 years, because when I bought it, you were supposed to put the date. I gave you a little stick-em thing, then you wrote the date that you bought it, and you put it on the outside, and you know that in, I think it was 7 years, to get a new one.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah, I most of them today now, the batteries are a 10-year battery, and at the end of 10 years, they tell you to throw it out.
Ah,
so, and buy a new one. I know a lot of homes that I go in, people have older smoke detectors, and they say, well, I change the batteries every time the time changes, and I push the button and it goes off. But if that thing is over 7 years old, I would recommend, like you said, the price has come down, mm-hmm. buy a new one. And when you buy a new one, get one that does smoke and fire and carbon monoxide, and that way you're covered.
Yeah, even a simple smoke detector, there's a detective device in there.
It's yeah.
a yep. strip or something. There's different kinds. But they have a shelf life. They don't last forever.
Yeah.
So you have to do more than just change the battery.
Yes.
I have the one that I, maybe it was 2 years ago that I bought this. I'll have to check that label. But there's an array, you know, when you go to the store to look at these things. I ended up getting one that it's a plug-in model, but it has a battery backup, a 9-volt battery backup, kind of like your alarm clock.
Yep.
Okay.
Yep.
So I thought that, well, that way, if for some reason the battery goes bad, I'll know that I'm still good. By the same token, if I lose power, and, electricity, then the battery will still work. So I don't know whether yep. I made the right choice or not. I felt comfortable with it.
That's actually the same one I have at my house. I like the ones that plug in. And, again, you get the plug-in that has a 10-year battery in it,
mm-hmm.
and then at the end of 10 years, you throw it out.
Right away.
They also make the digital displays on them, so it'll actually show you how many parts per million of carbon monoxide are in the house. So if you're walking down the hallway and you see it set at, maybe it says 20 parts per million, something is creating carbon monoxide in your house, and now's a good time to start looking for it before it gets to a level where it's a problem.
Now you know why we invited this man to talk to us today, because obviously Gary Schneider is a heating expert from Schneider's 1 Hour Heating and Air Conditioning. Many times, not always, but many times a carbon monoxide problem will originate with a faulty furnace, correct or no?
Yes. The main part of your furnace is, they call it the heat exchanger. That's the part that the gas is burnt on the inside of, either the gas or the oil. And by that, heat exchanger is made of steel. So by heating it up and cooling it down constantly, it's just like taking a piece of metal and bending it back and forth. Eventually, mm-hmm. it's going to break. So, and having that heat exchanger inspected to ensure that there's no voids in it, that there's no way that the gas from inside can get outside of that, is a very important thing. So a lot of times we get called to homes and they're saying, well, we checked, or the fire department checked, and there's carbon monoxide coming out of the registers. It's not that the furnace is producing carbon monoxide, it's that the furnace is actually circulating the air in the house. So something else in the house is creating carbon monoxide, but the furnace definitely can. Cooking stoves, people, their furnace quits and they want to stay warm, so they'll turn on the oven and open the door. Very bad thing to do. That oven is not meant to heat the house. So you'll get it, that can create a problem.
So even a, I assume you're talking about a gas stove here, right?
Yeah,
range.
Kitchen stove.
Mm-hmm. So there's, I assume there's still pilot lights and all those. I don't know. They sell pilot lights?
No, not the new ones.
Really?
Everything's a little spark, snap, snap, snap. You must have an old stove.
No, I have an electric. I have an electric one,
oh,
so
okay.
That's why. I haven't seen a gas stove since my mom's way back when.
Yeah.
So I thought they all still had pilot lights in them.
No, they don't. And again, the old home, your mom's home versus your home is a big difference. The older homes, the wind would blow and the air would come through the basement.
Mm-hmm.
I know a lot of homes that I was in 30 years ago, the water heater was not vented. They used that heat to help heat the basement. I've had a lot of people tell me that.
Wow.
Now, when there's a lot of air moving through the basement, that's fine. But in today's homes, they've insulated, they've caulked all the corners, they've changed all the windows, and there's no air being exchanged from the outside to the inside. So now it becomes much more important to make sure your furnace is vented, your water heater is vented, your stove is operating properly.
I think that really started
Listeners, we're chatting with Gary Schneider, if you're joining us a little bit late on the program here today. This is Carbon Monoxide Awareness Month. I think that whole thing of buttoning up your house started back in the 70s and 80s when we had the first energy crisis.
Yes.
Because we didn't, you know, people didn't really care about that before. We had gas lines and oil embargoes and everything else.
Yep.
And all of a sudden people started insulating, sealing up every crack in their home. That keeps it warmer, but there's no outside air circulating like there used to be. There's no drafts.
Nope. And, you know, we've closed up the homes, and now you run a kitchen vent and a bathroom vent and maybe a fireplace that is drawing more air out of the house. Mm-hmm. And if the house is tight, where's that air going to come from? So
it's my understanding, and I'm no expert here, but anytime there's something burning, anytime there's an open flame, carbon monoxide is being produced. Now, it may be in greater amounts depending on what you got burning, but you mentioned if you have a gas kitchen stove, it's a gas range. You turn the burners on or the oven on for heat, you got open flame burning.
Absolutely.
A lot of people now have, and these are relatively new too, the last 10 or 15 years, they've got gasoline generators to use in case of a power outage. Now, right away, people are going to say, well, we don't put those inside the house. We put them outside the window or somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you're still going to get that carbon monoxide being sucked in, right?
Yeah, well, you got to watch where that generator is located, because maybe the generator is located in an area where that air can get into your house for some
mm-hmm.
reason,
mm-hmm.
And that's a potential problem.
I've heard of that being a problem. I've also heard of people who, I don't know whether they don't realize the danger of carbon monoxide, but they'll put those things in a garage, an inside garage, okay?
Yep.
And we're running a generator in a garage. What's the difference? Hey, folks, what's the most common thing you hear on the news about people becoming sick or dying for carbon monoxide? It's when they pull the car in the garage and for some reason forget to turn it off.
Yes.
Especially elderly people.
Yep.
And it's the car exhaust. That is a huge producer of carbon monoxide.
Yeah, I often wonder about these remote starters now.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if little kids get a hold of it, or if it's laying on the couch and somebody, you know, you hit the button a certain amount of times, right, the car will start.
Yeah.
What if it's in the basement?
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
During power outages, you have people do different things. Because there's no power. Like that gas stove that your mom had would light when there was no power. But today, with the sparkers on there, if there's no spark, so that you can't get that stove lit. So maybe they'll take a gas grill, put it in the garage, and cook. Mm-hmm. That's a super bad idea.
Very bad.
So, yeah.
Next time you're at your car repair shop or your dealer garage, look what they have in the service bays. They've all got them now. There's a hose, a flexible hose, that when they pull your car in to work on it, they hook the hose up to the tailpipe, and it goes out through a hole in a garage door.
Yeah.
Because they don't want any carbon monoxide in there.
Yep.
So let's go back to the furnace thing, because I had personal experience with this, Gary Schneider. This is many, many years ago. My mom and dad, I wasn't living there, but they were getting some duct work done. And I'm not talking about leading right up to the registers, but it was right around the furnace in the basement.
Mm-hmm.
And discovered, when the crews were in there working, discovered that there was a leak in their heat exchanger.
Yes.
They had no idea.
Yeah.
No idea. And it was potentially deadly. It was right after that we all bought carbon monoxide detectors. We didn't care what they cost at that point. We went out and got them.
Yep, absolutely.
So you can get a crack or something in that. And do you recommend getting that checked every so often, just to be sure?
Absolutely. I recommend having your furnace checked every year, not just for that crack in the heat exchanger, but also, you know, gas pressure and checking the blower, checking for dirty filters, all mm-hmm. of that. But you know, we even look around the area and talk to people about clutter that gets put around that furnace. 3 feet, you ought to have a 3 feet area around the furnace where you don't store anything. No boxes, no, we see a lot of paint and paint thinner in basements, and between the furnace and the water heater, they're both open flames, so you don't want to leave any of that stuff laying around in the basement.
Don't store the lawnmower in there either.
Right.
Not the riding mower, but the push mower.
Right.
Is that a, if you get called for a, you know, a routine service check, is that a long process? Are you there forever or what?
You know, to do it and do it right, it takes between an hour and a half to go over a furnace from top to bottom. We have cameras that we put inside the heat exchanger, and, you know, we look to make sure that there's no voids or anything in them. We also work with a company that creates a book that shows us all of the manufacturers of furnaces and pictures of their heat exchangers, and they show us where they fail. So we can look in our book and we can see where this manufacturer has a potential problem and make sure that it's not a problem in your furnace. So
many furnaces will not have been turned on since late March, early April.
And you know, the longer that it sits there with without working, the more potential for a problem. So chimneys back up over the summertime, or maybe a squirrel decides to move in there, or birds, you know, you don't know. So
that would affect the venting of the fumes.
Absolutely. A lot of bees, a lot of stink bugs, that type of stuff.
Those are the ugliest things in the world. Let's take a break. We're talking with Gary Schneider from Schneider's One Hour Heating and Air Conditioning. Hey, our purpose is not to scare anybody. Our purpose is to make sure that you're aware of how deadly a problem carbon monoxide is. You can't see it, you can't smell it, you can't taste it. It just kills you. That's all. As simple as that. One of our sponsors on the program today is the Society of St. Vincent de Paul here in Butler, and their thrift store located in the Greater Butler Mart. They've got a variety of clothing, shoes, miscellaneous items, furniture there, and they're always looking for more. So if you're cleaning out the guest room, maybe in preparation for folks coming in for the holidays, or maybe you're just doing some cleaning of a closet or anywhere, consider donating unwanted items to the Society of St. Vincent de Paul thrift store. They'll sell those items. People can use them, probably get them at a price they wouldn't otherwise be able to afford. The really big thing is all of the proceeds from the operation of the store help to fund the Society of St. Vincent de Paul Food Cupboard and their client aid program. The store is in the Greater Butler Mart. They're open Monday through Saturday, 9 a.m. to 7 p.m. There's tons of free parking right outside the door, and the drop-off bins are right inside the door. Society of St. Vincent de Paul, we stand the tallest when we stoop to help others. Lottery numbers are available, are they? Okay, we'll check them right now. We'll be right back.
Midday lottery numbers for you today. The pick two is 6767. Pick three, 404. Pick four, 0106. Pick five, 10789. The wild ball for each of those is 9. The treasure hunt, 3, 4, 6, 16, and 29. Estimated jackpot for tomorrow's treasure hunt is $30,000.
Folks, want to talk to you for just a second about Jones Turkey Farm in Cabot. They're local, Jones Road in Cabot. The owner is Dave Jones. He stakes his reputation on their turkeys being simply the best. And, I mean, he's not just saying that. There's a reason for that. And have you heard about free-roaming turkeys? Natural, free-roaming turkeys and chickens? That's what they've got at Jones Turkey Farm. Their birds are handled with extreme care. They're specifically fed non-GMO grain. They are preservative-free. They are additive-free. And they're delicious. Now, you can buy your turkey frozen if that works for you, or you can get it fresh right before the big holiday meal. We'll give you a phone number here in just a second. You can call to order one today, or you can visit their website, jonesturkeyfarm.com. Phone number, 724-352-2450.
Jones Turkey Farm, Jones Road in Cabot. Simply the best. I could go for a big drumstick right now.
That reminds me to get one on order.
Yeah, oh, they're good. Gary Schneider is here. He's the owner of Schneider's 1 Hour Heating and Air Conditioning in Butler. So you recommend a service check on the furnace annually. Probably most folks have at least fired theirs up once or twice by now, but it's still okay. You can still get a check, right?
Oh, yeah. We get a lot of people that say, I haven't turned my furnace on yet. I want you to come over before I turn it on. Mm-hmm. So,
yeah. I used to always wait as long as possible. You know, I'd say, I don't care how cold it gets in early October. And then you get a little bit older and you say, what are you, nuts? You know, if it gets cold, then turn it on.
Yep.
What about unexpected problems? That's bad anytime. That's bad in July. But, boy, at 2 o'clock in the morning in January, that's brutal.
That is brutal. And as long as we've been in business, we've offered 24-hour service. We have a full fleet of trucks scattered all over the county that you know, whenever people call and they need service, that's what we do. So we've done that for over 60 years. I can remember when I was a kid, my dad get up in the middle of the night and go do service work. So we still do it today.
Your trucks would be hard to miss.
Yeah, big yellow trucks, they're hard to miss.
I think they're probably visible from the satellites circling the Earth.
Yes.
So obviously we recommend checking your smoke detector, your carbon monoxide detector, for goodness sakes, if you don't have them, man, it's a small investment that can very easily save your life. And even if it doesn't save your life, you can get very sick, you know, and if somebody finds you and they can get you outside the house, what if your smoke detector goes off? Open the windows, open the doors, get out of the house?
If your carbon monoxide detector goes off, for sure, get out of the house and get to fresh air. Even before you call for help, get out into the fresh air and get away from the potential problem. So,
And if you notice your spouse or your parent or something getting sleepy, getting droopy, that could be a sign that, you know, they're beginning to develop carbon monoxide poison.
Absolutely. If you have, elderly people that, you're not in the house all the time, but they are, and you go to visit, once or twice a week, and you notice that, they say, oh, I'm dizzy and I'm having, problems. I'm feeling like maybe I'm getting the flu or something. You know, that's a great time to get them out of the house and get them checked. If there's not a carbon monoxide detector in there, get one in there. It's a very inexpensive way of saving a lot of lives.
I was talking about my mom and dad's house when I was a little kid. The first furnace that I can remember was this gargantuan thing. I mean, it was like half the size of a room. It was really monstrous. Hey, folks, if you have one of those older furnaces, you would be astonished to see how small they are. How can they make them so small and they still work?
Yeah, I don't know. Everything is more compact, lighter, more efficient, and certainly we're not throwing coal in them anymore. Mm-hmm. That's probably what the big one in your house was.
More efficient, I think it was. Yeah, more efficient is a key because that can save you money. I mean, you can actually amortize the cost of a new furnace over a period of several years because you're saving money.
Absolutely. Something else I might want to add before we're done here is, we see a lot more ventless heaters today. There's a space heater mounts on the wall, has a flame. They're somewhat decorative. Mm-hmm. Even fireplaces that are they'll say ventless. Make sure to read the directions on those. Make sure that you're getting enough fresh air to them, because just because they're ventless doesn't mean you can put them in a closed-in room or a garage or a bathroom. They're not intended for that.
There's new technology nowadays, right, that you don't necessarily have to vent into a chimney like in the olden days. I've seen some. It's a rather small diameter pipe.
Right. Yeah, that's right. They make fireplaces today that vent. They're on the wall and they vent with plastic pipe out the side, gas fireplaces. Mm-hmm. So just got to make sure that all those things that are in your home that are burning gas or oil are vented and operating properly.
Because they're all producing carbon monoxide.
Absolutely.
To one degree or another. Hey, thanks for the safety tips, Gary Schneider. It's educational, but more important, it's safety.
Thanks for having me, Dave. I appreciate it.
Carbon Monoxide Awareness Month, especially important as we head into the winter season. We thank our earlier guests, Jonathan Balcom, when we chatted about the inner lives of animals. Coming up on tomorrow's program, our guests include Alan Klein, who has an intriguing subject, Secrets That Kids Know That Adults Ought to Learn. I'm intrigued, yeah, that's for sure. And we'll also talk tomorrow on the program, tomorrow's the